This program is supported by a grant from Seagate Technology. Seagate is a worldwide supplier of disk drives for PCs and servers and innovations for products like the Microsoft Xbox, digital video recorders, and digital jukeboxes. Information can be found at Seagate.com. It's Friday, July 18th, 2003, 10:04 a.m. on the Central Coast of California. It's time for Geek Speak. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. My name is Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. This morning on Geek Speak, we're talking with Charlie Manske about the demise of Netscape. During the second half of the show, I invite you to join our conversation. The numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. I'll be giving out those numbers again when I invite your participation in about a half an hour. This is Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air room with me is geek John Tracy. John, welcome to Geek Speak.
I feel so alone in here.
It is kind of strange not to have the whole crew here, but I'm glad you're here. John, we'll start our discussion with Charlie Manske about AOL and Netscape in just a moment. But first, a little bit of geek news. Very little.
Very little.
John?
We have a report here from ISS, which is the Internet Security Services, not to be confused with IIS, which kind of keeps ISS in business. IIS is the Internet Information Services that Microsoft uses. Anyway, ISS has said that the incident of hacker activity is lower, so there's less people out there hacking stuff, but they're being more effective. One of the reasons for this is that they're exploiting stuff that's been out there for a while. There's patches as old as almost a year that have not been implemented. And because of this, people, hackers, bad guys, are able to crack into sites that are vulnerable simply because patches haven't been applied. So if you're out there and you have a website and you that you host for goodness sakes, please update your patches and help put these guys out of business.
So you're saying basically that since the security leaks have been around for so long, for a year or more sometimes, the hackers have been able to write really good code to access them and use them.
Probably. Okay, here's a little terminology for you. There's the people, the real hackers, they go out, they find the vulnerabilities. They're not really hackers or crackers, but they find the vulnerabilities, and then they write some kind of malicious program that can take advantage of that. Similar to a virus, but usually it's designed to attack a certain exploit. A certain vulnerability. They then write a script for that. Enter script kiddies. These are, usually high school age,
younger sometimes.
Yeah, younger kids. I know. junior high school kids usually that go out, find these scripts and run them. They may not be running them at the sites. So a lot of times a site will get an attack that's not really based for that site.
So you're basically saying someone without a lot of hacking knowledge can start using these tools that are pretty effective.
Right. They're out there and they're available. They're called rootkits a lot of times because on Unix they attack to try and gain root access. You can have control of the Unix box. Now, when a hole like this is discovered, there's usually a patch that comes out right away, a piece of software that'll cover that vulnerability. People who run servers need to go and download this patch to keep people from being able to exploit that.
Now, these patches are not necessarily servers either. They're a multitude of things. Like personal computers need to be upgraded too. For example, Windows has a whole bunch of bugs in it throughout that have security holes. And if you're running Windows 98, for example, or Windows XP, any of the Windows versions, you really need to keep that up to date as soon as possible. And the way you do that is go to windows.microsoft.com/update, I think, or windowsupdate.microsoft.com. Basically, you'll find it pretty quick if you go to Microsoft and try to do updates, and they'll have all these things to download. And even if it takes a long time for you to install and download these patches, it's probably safer for you in the long run to do so.
As much as I love to Windows bash, it's not just Microsoft. Every operating platform out there has its vulnerabilities. So
for Mac OS X, how do you upgrade how do you patch them?
If you're running OS X, there's a simple thing called software update. It's in the
system
preferences. Yeah,
you just run
software
that.
Update. You can have it do it automatically if you have a DSL connection, or you can go and click on it and have it do it when you want, or schedule it to do it at night if you have dial-up.
One thing of note, if you have a Airport Extreme card in your computer and you haven't run software update in a while, don't actually run software update or the quality will degrade.
Oh, that's because the 802.11g has finally been ratified by the IEEE.
And the hardware that was out there was not in compliance, so they changed the compliance, and unfortunately they decreased the range.
It also dropped it from 54 megabits per second maximum throughput to 24.
The newer Airport Extreme stuff should have that covered. And I'll step into the next news item. With regards to wireless in the home, a new product line has come out, a few different products of this new product genre, if you will. Personal media systems that connect your computer to your television, the new paradigm, both by Linksys and by Sony, Sony's only is for VAIO support, which is one of their laptops, is basically this wireless receiver. It also can take, both of them can also take Ethernet connectors. It's a wireless receiver that sits with your television and has a remote control that comes with it. And you sit there and you can browse your photos on your computer and also your audio files and movies through this wireless system, which then tells the computer some software on your computer that has to be running and also have a wireless connection to play this media through this wireless form, and then you get to view it in your entertainment center. Great way to look through photographs on your computer and such, because you can do it from in your entertainment realm rather than in your office. Looks like a cool product. Both Linksys is called Linksys Wireless B Media Adapter, and Sony's is the Sony VAIO RoomLink Network Media Receiver, and both those products have hit recently, so we're going to probably see a whole new genre of products in this realm.
There's also the TiVo 2. TiVo is a PVR, personal video recorder. The new TiVo 2 has a home service that allows you to hook it up to your computer, and you can do the same thing, browse music, browse photos, browse movies, and there's a couple of hacks out there that you can actually store the movies on your computer.
Oh, interesting. So it's funny, because anytime you're talking about media distribution for yourself or better media services in your own home, it crosses over really quickly to taking illegal copies of things. And that paradigm is going to be with us for a while. For now, I'm going to accept that if people are honest with themselves, then there shouldn't really be a problem.
Oh, and that's kind of a related news story to that.
Please.
If you're out there still illegally sharing songs,
MP3s from your website specifically.
Right, the RIAA is coming down
hard on people.
Starting to actually pursue that.
Have they actually sued anybody yet? Do you know?
No, I don't know.
Okay. All right. Thank you, John, for helping me out with the news today. I do want to get right into our discussion with Charlie. Charlie Mansky is a PhD of biology from UCLA. He then worked right out of school. He worked in the biotech field as a computer consultant and then went into UI design for Netscape in 1995. He worked for Netscape doing the composer editor, and he quit in January. If for all of you that don't know, Netscape was kind of consumed by AOL recently to, quote, save it from the Microsoft dominance of the browser market. And this last week, all the Netscape logos started being peeled off the buildings, and large layoffs of programmers and redistribution of programmers' talents happened this last week as well. Charlie Mansky worked for Netscape from 1995 to January of this year when he resigned, and we now have Charlie from his home. Charlie, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi.
Hi. So, Charlie, you worked on the Composer, just to get clear on what you worked on, the Composer / Microsoft Mozilla Editor?
Right, yeah. I was technically really pretty much an engineer, but I wasn't as strong an engineer as a lot of my colleagues, and so I think the reason I added more value was because I could do the UI design half of the story as well, which normally those two roles are split up.
Yeah, and now the UI design, it's interesting they come from a biology perspective, but UI design is really about the interface between the computer and the person, and I've seen some really horrible interfaces developed by programmers, so it's really nice to have someone that's focused on UI design.
Exactly. I effectively came to computers both from the programming and the user point of view simultaneously, so I'm always interested as to, you know, how one interacts and solves difficult technical problems with computers, and so how to design an interface to do that. And that's sort of, I learned that sort of stuff in doing these biotech company software projects the few years before I joined Netscape.
Right. Okay, so you quit in January. Let's just get right to the meat. Why did you quit in January?
Well, since, let's see, 11-19-98 is the date I have here for when AOL bought Netscape. It was, ironically, exactly the same time when we announced transferring over to an entirely new code base, which is now known as the Mozilla Open Source Software Movement.
Now, was that part of AOL's decision, or was that decision
no,
made
that prior? That actually occurred before. In fact, the Mozilla Source was released in, March of 98, right? And so it was before AOL got into it, but it was actually the original code base, in fact, the same code base that IE was based on, the Mosaic browser code base.
Right.
And so we knew at the time, you know, that particular year that this old code base had to die and that we needed to reinvent the browser and with a better architecture and things like that. So we were already on that road when all of a sudden, you know, knock, 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 and AOL was at our door. And when they first bought us, things weren't bad. I mean, we continued developing that pretty much untouched for a good year and a half. But that was during the boom when, you know, the AOL was happy and earning lots of money and they could sort of ignore us and didn't meddle into exactly what we were doing too much. So anyway, so... But since that day, you know, since that time period, rather, myself and a lot of other people like me always sort of felt we worked for Mozilla first, Netscape second, and AOL third.
Okay, I like that. Let's talk about Mozilla with respect to the separation from Netscape. Mozilla is an open source web browser, meaning that anybody can contribute. Anybody that wants to spend time programming actually gets to contribute. And Netscape took a lot of their programming force and said, your assignment is to work on this open source project.
Exactly.
A new paradigm, really, in business, where you pay people to work on something that no one owns. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, and the relationship was pretty good. It was sort of hierarchical, and I'm not sure a lot of people realize this, but, for example, when Netscape 6.0 or 7.0 came out, it's really Mozilla. I mean, 99% of it is the Mozilla software, and then there's just a layer of stuff added on, you know, a little bit more added value and a little bit of a few things that are not necessarily added value I like to talk about, like pop-ups, uh-huh. that are proprietary in a sense and, you know, that AOL owned or AOL, you know, told us to do. So
okay, let's talk about pop-ups for a second. So there's a core browser called Mozilla. I actually still use it. It's still being developed.
Mozilla is alive and well, yeah.
Right. And what was going on is Netscape had a bunch of employees that would work on Mozilla. And then every once in a while, a version of Mozilla would be kind of a snapshot, and there'd be more wrapper stuff put on top of that, and that would be called Netscape 6 or Netscape 6 whatever.
Right.
And those wrappers over that were proprietary for Netscape, but everything else was open source.
Exactly.
Okay, yeah. So you said that AOL did some things, mandated some things for the Netscape browser. What'd they mandate?
Well, let's see. IM, of course, the AIM, you know, AIM component.
AOL Instant Messenger.
Exactly, uh-huh. Instant Messenger.
Chatting
is
utility.
A component that's part of the package. The big thing that happened with the 7.0 release, mm-hmm. which, okay, well, just to back up just a little bit, okay, everybody knows that when we released 6.0 in, let's see, early 2001, that it was buggy. It wasn't very stable. It really was a bad thing to do, and all of the engineers at Netscape knew that. We would have never have done that. And it was a management decision that we had to get something out at that time.
From the AOL management group?
That's a good... I don't know who to pin the blame on, but okay. I think it was a combination between Netscape and AOL management.
Now, when you say... Of course, in retrospect, it's easy to say, you know, that browser really kind of crashed hard. It gave Microsoft even larger share because
exactly.
people stopped using it.
It accelerated
but
it. Yeah.
Prior to it going live, when it was about to go live, did you hear inside Netscape with the programmers that this was a bad decision? Were people saying that?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we knew it. And so what did we do? Well, we fixed it, of course. And so we worked our butts off the next, you know, year or so. And let's see, it was like August in 2002, I think it was, that 7.0 was released. And that was solid. That was a really, really good browser. And the Mozilla, for example, that was getting reviewed at that time, got rave reviews from all of the tech journalists and things.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the irony. When 7.0 came out, even though it's technically the same product, it got... sort of, you know, got good reviews, but we were hoping for 9s and 10s, and we got like maybe 7s and 8s.
Huh.
And one of the biggest issues about that release was the advertising pop-ups. AOL told us we had to have these advertising pop-ups.
And so you're talking about the browser doing it, not the web pages doing it, but the browser actually...
The browser, right, exactly, triggers. Well, the browser sort of released through NetCenter, you know, the portal, the Netscape portal, right?
Right.
And so it would basically come out with advertising for the Netscape portal and for AOL products, like, you know, join AOL. You get a lot of different... pop-ups that, you know, want you to join AOL or
now,
want you to... You know.
I think everybody's familiar with pop-ups, but real quickly, you're in an application, you're doing the things you want to do, and then, boom, in front of you pops a window, opens up a window with some kind of advertising.
Exactly.
And you can quickly just close it, but it does that frequently.
Right.
People that use AOL as their... and log into AOL as their kind of interface to the web and interface to services that AOL provides are very familiar with that pop-ups. And even other people are familiar with the pop-ups happening when you visit certain web pages. But what you're saying is that mix between AOL's completely proprietary environment and their open their browser that they're giving out for free, there was kind of a mix to that, and the browser itself was launching new ads. Did those ads have anything to do with where the people were visiting, or was it really just specific to where people bought? I mean, the AOL relationship of who got advertising on there.
Well, the only one I really ever saw for a while until I started implementing. I blocked my own, so I really never saw a lot of them. And most of them were really for Netscape itself. I mean, it would, like, tell you to download the browser that I'm looking at the web with. So, you know, silly things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so they would point towards the so-called AOL, you know, Netscape, what's the word they use for that? Anyway, like Time Warner. This gets involved with the Time Warner relationship, too. You know, so they want to point you to resources that they own.
It's amazing. I can see the decision process way up the chain. You know, we've got this free browser we're giving out to people.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't we add advertising to support our network? I mean,
right.
it makes sense, I mean, from an executive command. But what you're saying is when the browser was actually released, it was basically the same thing with this advertising wrapper and a few other features as the Mozilla browser, and yet the Mozilla browser had great reviews from everybody, and the Netscape browser had bad reviews.
Well, I wouldn't say they're bad, but they were criticized. And here's the interesting fact, okay? Pop-up blocking was part of the Mozilla build.
Okay.
And that was suppressed, or not exposed, rather, in the Netscape build.
So what you're saying is the experience of going to pages that actually have pop-up ads, you'll see those all over the place, especially for those little cameras.
Yeah.
That is actually a feature in Mozilla. You could say, I don't want those things to happen.
Exactly.
And Netscape browser version, the same Mozilla core, disabled that feature?
Yep.
So it took control from the advertising perspective out of the hands of the user.
Exactly.
Okay, and I'm sure that caused aggression on people's want to use it.
Yeah, and then guess what happened?
People switched to Mozilla or Microsoft?
No. About 2 months later, 7.01 came out, and Netscape convinced AOL that we have to allow people to get access to the pop-up suppressor.
Okay, so 7.1, the core of the Netscape old folk were able to convince AOL that you got to turn this back on.
7.01, actually.
7.01, yeah. Okay. So it was really a quick release afterwards.
Exactly.
And did that help?
By then, you know, well, it depends on what you mean by help, because by then our browser share was, you know, down in the dumps anyway. And that's really the kind of Microsoft side of the story. And so all of this, of course, is going on during a really bad sort of economic slump in the dot-com industry. And so it's hard to, you know, it's very complicated, obviously. And there's lots of different effects and causality going on between the Microsoft influence, the lack of the government doing anything about that, the general decline of the internet business, lack of advertising, of course, is a really, really big thing that really hurt AOL. And what I think is that AOL really never appreciated this free browser. I mean, they never really utilized our technology. Anyway, let me stop there.
Well, okay, Charlie, let me ask you something here. Mm-hmm. How does a company develop a whole bunch of time and energy into a product like the Mozilla project, which is not even owned by them, really, and then have a wrapper around it that's kind of their product that's owned, but they're giving away? How do they try to recoup revenue from that? How do they make that a profitable business?
Advertising. That's the only way they know how.
Okay.
And we had a lot of different meetings, and this is a general problem in the industry, is how do you make money when most of the software is free or can be stolen? I mean, it's really similar to the MP3 music problem as well. And so how do you make money when people can get at stuff and steal it or copy it or whatever? I don't know. That's a difficult problem.
So what you say that AOL didn't really appreciate what they had. What was there to appreciate other than a really cool product
Well, for example, when you try to figure out, you know, the browser numbers that, you know, when Microsoft was slowly chipping away at the balance, I think I found the web page, which was like right at the tip where it started shifting over, which was like in late 1998.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the thing. AOL has a browser inside of it, okay? That
right.
browser is basically IE. It's IE's engine.
Right.
Okay, so at the time, the IE was made into a COM module and could be used by other Windows programs, and just Windows programs, then it, you know, it became more popular, right? So AOL, though, was like huge numbers. AOL is 25% of the total IE market.
Wow.
So here's the thing. So what did they tell us? Why did they tell us they bought Netscape? Because we were developing this technology called Gecko, which is basically the same thing, pluggable browser. And they kept saying, you know, oh, well, you know, next year we will switch from using the IE module to using the Gecko or, you know, Mozilla Gecko module. And overnight, we would be on top of the figures again.
Right.
And they kept dragging that on and dragging that on and dragging that on, and they never did it. And they aren't going to do it to this day.
Why didn't they do it? I mean, they own the browser.
What they tell us. They tell us that it wasn't good enough. And in a sense, that's where the 6.0 thing hurt us, because it wasn't stable enough, and the Gecko engine itself was actually the most stable part, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But it still, quote, wasn't up to their standards. Because here's the thing. If you have, you know, 40 million subscribers, you can't have everybody calling in saying, you know, that this is breaking or I've got
right.
a problem, I can't use this. And so they are really, really sensitive to software quality. And so you have to give AOL that at least they learned how to make pretty good software.
Mm-hmm.
But they're still locked into an old world of pretty heavy, you know, Windows-only apps, you know, maybe Mac-only apps if they're developing for that at all, and not, you know, nothing at all for Unix, right?
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
So
and yet we are kind of in a totally different environment where we're doing cross-platform apps, more web-based, and more, you know, just generally not bowing down to Microsoft.
Right.
So,
well, let me ask you this. Do you think that the browser that AOL, like even currently, is using in their core, which is IE engine, mm-hmm. do you think that's a good browser?
It's okay. I mean, you know, the IE module has all the security problems that everybody hears about all the time, and we don't.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, you know, an interesting topic. Now, something to point out, though, is that the CompuServe browser has Gecko in it, and that's been around for now over a year.
So we do have a large market share
that
using
test,
it.
Yeah, that was actually supposedly the test. So that was kind of the beta test for, can Gecko be embedded into an AOL product?
Right.
And CompuServe, yes.
CompuServe used to be a standalone company. AOL consumed it a while ago. And
exactly.
It was basically the only competitor with AOL in that kind of niche, not really internet interface, but kind of a portal environment, which is AOL, and also CompuServe. And CompuServe, the Gecko engine was used. Okay, that's interesting. I didn't know that Gecko engine was used in that. Now, Gecko, of course, being the rendering part,
right.
or the inside internal rendering part of the Mozilla project. Now, I heard a pretty pretty harsh commentary on Mozilla and what the Mozilla project currently has and,
oh, really?
And what's going on. Yeah, and I'll send that off to you.
Okay.
But in general, the reviewer was saying, you know, Mozilla, Netscape, AOL, Mozilla kind of killed itself in a lot of regards because instead of offering really quickly a good alternative to Microsoft's Internet Explorer, instead, an entire project was born to develop a really good, clean architecture. And after the architecture was really honed out, the browser was built. I mean, it's true that the process for building Mozilla from scratch, which started in, what, 98?
Yeah.
That's a long process. We have a great browser now. I personally use the Mozilla browser. But that took a long time. Why did it take so long? That's 5 years.
Good question. It's it took more like three, really, to get to some
sure, yeah, because we had something good a couple years ago.
Well, you do keep getting pushed and pulled in different directions, okay? If they were allowed to do that and nothing else but that, you get into, like, you know, core functionality, making things fast. You discover problems along the way. Making things really... A really good architecture is not trivial. It's
no.
very difficult to do that cleanly. I think it's pretty darn fast.
especially
with... I don't know. I don't think we were too slow.
John
we were working hard, I'll tell you.
Especially when the application you're designing, the environment you're using it in is constantly changing. Because during, you know, the last 5 years, what's happened to the World Wide Web? I mean, it's changed a lot.
Right.
And, of course, the install base. That's another thing that's really important about the Mozilla product. It's not just an installation. It's not just a browser for Mac or Windows. It's for every operating system basically out there. There's a compilation of that same browser for those different platforms. And that's a big improvement upon the Microsoft realm, where in Mac IE, you haven't had a modification to it in years.
Right. Yeah, but let me point something out. Mm-hmm. Okay. When we did go down this, you know, re-architecture thing, we got religion. And that is standards.
Okay? Yes.
So all of a sudden now, so until this day, you know, we comply to all the HTML standards, the CSS standards, and stuff much better than Microsoft.
Yeah.
I'm trying to use CSS in my website, and I keep running into these bugs, and it's really really frustrating. And so, you know, we talked about that a little bit last time I was on the air when we created, you know, Netscape and Microsoft created this horrible situation for web developers by having their own proprietary tags and no standards mm-hmm. compliance, and we decided, you know, we're going to do it right. And like you say, those standards actually were changing as we're developing. So
sure.
That does kind of contribute to, you know, the length of time, because we're trying to figure out, okay, well, what's the standard we need to aim at for a particular release?
Yeah, and I want to talk a little bit about the standards, and we'll do that in just a moment. Just
sure.
in general, real quick, Microsoft is not as compliant at all as these to
no.
these standards, but Microsoft's web browser share is so immense that it's almost overpowering the standards.
Exactly. It's a fait accompli now, but yeah.
Yeah, so that's a difficult situation that the industry's in. We'll get back to that in a second. I also want to talk a little bit about what website you're referring to. This program is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts, as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. You're listening to Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air room with me is geek John Tracy, and on the phone is Charlie Mansky. Charlie is a former programmer for Netscape and is currently working on his own projects. The phone numbers to join the discussion are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. If you'd like to email us, you're welcome to go to our website, geekspeak.org, click on the Geeks, and then contact us with that web form. That goes to all of us, and we'd be more than happy to take your questions online. But if you're out of phone, use that, 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. This program is supported by a grant from Cruise.io, providing internet services, including DSL and spam filters, for home and office throughout Santa Cruz County. Information about Cruise.io membership is available online at cruise.io.com or by calling 459-6301. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP. My name is Lyle Troxell, and you are listening to Geek Speak. If you have questions or comments, now's the time. You can ask about the Mozilla, the Netscape AOL situation. You can ask about anything else if you'd like. Mostly today we can cover Macintosh and Windows.
Networking.
And some networking stuff. And if you have any questions about online selling through eBay, you're welcome to call about that as well. The numbers are 476-2800 or toll free at 1-800-655-5877. You can contact us at our website, geekspeak.org. Charlie.
Yeah.
Hi. The standard situation, basically there's this nonprofit group called the W3C.
Right.
And they're the World Wide Web Consortium is what it stands for. And the basic concept there is you get a group of smart people and you put them in different committees, and they define different aspects of how the web will work in the future, mostly HTML and basically, well, a lot of the features about the web. They're basically the standards body for the web. And what the Mozilla team is, you said recently, well, quite a while ago, took on a religion of saying, we'll just comply to what that standard body says. Microsoft does do some compliance to that, but not nearly as much, and they add a lot of new, neat features without going through the consortium. So what does that cause? What happens?
It causes the same mess that we had from the beginning, which is, and they can do this, of course, only because of their monopoly power. And the fact that when you buy a new computer, you get IE. And so, you know, it's not like all the people who use IE chose IE over Netscape. It's, you know, their business plan was brilliant. The business plan which they took to court to, And they were found to be, you know, that was illegal, and they basically got away with it, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
what
it causes. It causes lack of competition. So now, what do web developers have to develop for? They have to develop for the Microsoft situation rather than the standards. So it marginalizes the standards body, I think.
Or they can develop for a subset of standards that actually happen to work on
exactly,
IE.
Yeah. But you still end up with the same, you have to check. You have to check the browser, and you have to say, "Oh, okay, I'm Netscape, and I don't have to be as, or Mozilla, and I don't have to worry as much." But oh, it's IE, so I can't do this and I can't do that.
What I'm flabbergasted by now is, for example, our geek Miles, who's not here today, he's on a road trip cross country. He is enrolled at Cabrillo and is going to classes there, and their online form only accepts IE5 and Netscape 4.7. Which, of course, is an extremely old version of Netscape. And the basic, I'm sure the reasoning for this is they went, you know what, we know it works for this. We'll hard code that in, and that's the way it will be. And they haven't touched it for a while, most likely.
Right.
And that is a real flaw in systems. We see that kind of stuff happening all the time. And so then you look at it and you go, well, I have Netscape 6 and it's not working. Or I have Netscape 7 and it's not working. I've got to also install IE to actually use these features, which is a public organization. That's a really messy situation.
Exactly.
Isn't that standard now? I have 4 browsers.
Yeah, I have multiple browsers too. In the Windows environment, it's you can do that as well. But for IE, you pretty much have to have one IE installed. What about you, Charlie? What browser are you currently using?
Oh, I use Mozilla. I don't even use the Netscape browser anymore, I think, because I'm still trying to. I haven't done a whole lot of work, I must admit, since January, because I'm trying to start my own business stuff. But I've been following along with Mozilla. I've been using 1.4, and it's really stable. I'd also like to point out that Mozilla project is sort of evolving. And so now what the latest hot news is that it's being broken down into more efficient parts, which have slightly different feature sets. And so, for example, the browser itself is called Firebird.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a mail project called Thunderbird. What else is there? Composer, which I worked on, is still kind of left in limbo. And we do have a really good engineer who lives in Paris, who's trying to break apart the Composer module, and so it's freestanding or an add-on mm-hmm. to one of these other components and try to revive the Composer project. So I hope to be able to contribute to that.
So you do plan on doing some contribution to that project?
Oh, yeah. I mean, when I quit AOL, I quit AOL. I didn't quit Mozilla.
I have a question for you.
Yeah,
I used to use a cool little fast browser called Navigator.
Yeah?
That was part of the Mozilla open source project. Whatever happened to Navigator?
Well, Navigator is just the browser part of, the Mozilla / Netscape,
Yeah, it was great. It was streamlined. It was fast.
What you're looking for is Gecko.
It's called Gecko now?
I'm sorry, Firebird.
The underlying rendering engine, okay? Navigator includes the UI, right, which is based on this XML language called Zool, which I talked about last time.
Mm-hmm.
And Navigator is still the module which has the UI, which has displays the web pages, right? So the significant features that are in the Mozilla / Netscape / Firebird that are really, really outstanding are things like tabbed browsing. Tabbed browsing just revolutionizes how many people use the web. So you can have one big, large window and individual web pages that are on little tabs, and when you want to go to a site and you want to click on a whole bunch of different links to explore things, you just go control-click, 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 and they pop up on a new tab in the background. So you don't lose your focus on what you're looking at, and you see the little icon spinning, and then when that page is finished loading, you click on the tab, and you go to the other, link.
It's a great feature.
It's incredible. I mean, that's so revolutionary.
And AOL actually has embraced that tab browsing, and it has that in Safari now.
Is it?
Which is, yeah, their browser.
Want to know something?
Yeah, please.
I never used AOL.
Oh, you haven't?
I had an account I never, ever used. I never signed on and used AOL.
You said AOL. I think you meant Apple.
I'm sorry, Apple. Apple in the Macintosh browser Safari has tab browsing.
Which is this, the Mozilla for Apple or what?
No, this is Apple Safari. That's their own
Apple
web browser.
Safari. Oh, their own. Oh,
yeah,
okay.
And it's based on, what is it based on? Let's see, it's not the Mozilla core. It's another one of the open source browser movements. You want to list some of them for me? And I'll try to pick out the one that I can't remember what it is.
Another open source, really?
Yeah. Well, we'll get into that in a second.
Mozilla does have a Mac only.
Yeah, and actually, I use the Mozilla browser on my Macintosh, and I also use the Safari browser. We'll get back into this discussion. Gary from Santa Cruz is calling. Hi, Gary. Welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi, you're thinking about the Conqueror code base.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Phew.
And that touches on some of the other themes you've been discussing, like style sheet and bloatware. You guys aren't talking about early 90, pre-98 history of the whole Netscape trip.
You want to talk about that?
Yeah, and that touches on this whole bloat thing. Apparently, Apple went with the Conqueror code base because Mozilla was too bloated. It wasn't that the code was better, it was too bloated.
Okay, the bloated concept meaning that there's a lot of feature sets in there.
And that drags all the way back to the prehistory when Netscape was trying to pull Microsoft on the net. I don't know if you remember, but there used to be a lot of websites that said best if viewed with Netscape because anybody else's browser was hosed because Netscape wasn't adhering to the standards.
Right.
They were doing this because they wanted to be the Microsoft of the net. They wanted their browser to be an application development target, which means instead of developing for an operating system, you develop for Netscape. And if you don't develop for Netscape, you lose on the net.
Charlie, can you address this?
Oh, yeah, no, I totally agree with that. And that is the way it was. And I also understand what you're saying about the early Mozilla, the early Gecko versions, right? We're pretty big, and I know there was a big memory problem with Macintosh. But I'm wondering if you're actually referring to the old code base. So I know, when we develop a browser, it's always cross-platform. So as soon as we went with open source, we were developing browsers that were, there's a Mac version and a Unix version. And do you think it was the very first version, the early 1998 version you're referring to?
No, I'm talking about the Netscape before the
code switch.
Before the developers broke away from legal and marketing.
Well, let's talk about this real quick. Netscape prior to 98, there was a Netscape browser. That would be 4.7, I think, was the latest incarnation of that. And that code base was, from the beginning, 2.0 Netscape. It was the same code base all the way through, kind of being added on and added on and added on. And that caused the application to be really messed up. So in 98, it was dropped completely, and a restart from scratch with the Mozilla project happened. Is that right, Charlie?
Well, okay. No. See, that's the thing. The Mozilla came first and included this old code base for a few months.
Okay.
And then there was a switch to this sort of new Gecko, new architecture stuff. So that happened under Mozilla.
Okay. So what we're talking with Gary's call, we're talking about pre the new code base, the bloat that was going on definitely caused AOL not to go with Netscape.
You're right. I was thinking about the Apple deal.
Oh, okay. And then the Apple, okay, so recently Apple didn't go with Mozilla, which is kind of an interesting project, and they just released a Safari less than a year ago, and Mozilla was definitely in a state where it was considered a good browser from a lot of people. Why do you think that, Gary, why do you think that AOL didn't go with Mozilla as their
Apple
rendering engine? Why didn't Apple go with Mozilla?
Yeah. The word I've heard is that it was too bloated because of that. Pre-98, Netscape wanted to be Microsoft effect, where they wanted everything in the kitchen sink in the supposed browser. Apple didn't need that, so they looked for a code base. As far as I understand, looked for a code base.
I don't think that was
a browser.
That's not from what I've heard in the industry in general about why Apple didn't pick it. It's not because of the pre-98 bloatware. They looked at the browsers.
No. They looked at Mozilla, but it carried on the tradition of we got to have everything in there, a chat client, and the other thing.
Charlie, can you address that?
Right,
Mozilla.
Right. What you're saying is that, even under Mozilla, it was still a big app. In other words, it still had browser, mail, composer, although composer is pretty small, actually. Mail, actually, I think was getting pretty big, and it was probably bigger than the browser. So that was the motivation for splitting it up and going to this like Firebird, Thunderbird suite. And, this is all in flux, and sure, there's a lot of people that are in Mozilla that agreed with Apple, and they were working together a lot. We had our own project called Chimera for a while, then it was called Camino, and along the way, Apple made a decision, well, we're going to go ahead and try to develop our own, too. And so things change so fast that things change much, much, much faster than you can sit down and have a cogent developing strategy and implement the code with any quality.
Yeah.
That's been the problem in the past decade.
And, you know, Apple deciding to do it with their own browser, they did take a rendering engine. Gary, you mentioned that rendering engine was what?
Conqueror. I'm pretty sure that's...
I think that is it as well. And Conqueror is relatively fast.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure exactly why Apple decided to go that route, but they definitely did. But one of the things that Apple... One of the things that Conqueror is doing, and Apple is doing very strongly, is applying to these W3C standards.
Which helps a lot, because I get burned by the style sheet thing to you all the time.
Are you a developer, web developer?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, Gary, thank you very much for the call.
Thank you.
And style sheets, for those of you wondering, it gives you a way to dynamically change everything in your web page. And then you can use a cascading style sheet, which gives you a way to dynamically change everything on your website. So you can put in a certain header tag, and then when you change what's in that tag, it changes everything that uses that header tag. It's a pretty nice way to develop a website.
Charlie, do you want to add more to that CSS?
CSS is wonderful. This is a site I really like called SitePoint.com.
SitePoint?
Yeah.
Okay.
And they are all about promoting CSS, PHP, and MySQL for making dynamic websites.
Uh-huh.
And they have a couple of really good books, and one of the books is how to build web pages, efficient web pages, using CSS instead of tables. Because most web pages are built with these like monstrously complicated table structures, which really slow down rendering. And anyway, I recommend that. Like I said before, it's frustrating. For example, my own website I'm working on, there are CSS attributes that let you have a list, and you can put scroll bars on this list, and it's really, really cool. And they work under Mozilla, but they don't work under IE.
Scroll bar on a list? Explain.
Yeah.
You mean you can have a giant list and have a scroll bar next to it?
Yeah, exactly. So instead of having to scroll the whole page, you can have an embedded, you know, rectangle, which is a list. And all you have to do is tell it, well, how many rows do I want to display? And anything that overflows, if you have more than that, it'll just automatically pop up a little, you know, implement the scroll bar, and so you can scroll through the list. It's very, very efficient, and that works perfectly
on Mozilla on all platforms.
Right, but on IE, it doesn't understand this overflow concept, and it just makes a big long list instead. So,
but at least it renders the page effectively.
It renders the page, and it's usable, but it's not what the designer wanted.
Right. We are talking with Charlie Manske, former employee at Netscape from 95 until January of this year, talking about the Apple consumption of Netscape and recently the...
AOL consumption of Netscape.
Gosh, I keep on doing that. The AOL consumption of Netscape and the recent demise of Netscape, the closing of Netscape as a body by itself, and the browser, the stopping of the Netscape browser, and the continuation of the Mozilla browser. That's discussion in general. The phone numbers, if you'd like to join our discussion, 476-2800, or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. You can also send us email by visiting geekspeak.org. Click on the geeks, and you'll see a link for contacting us. Charlie, what are you doing now that you left Netscape in January?
Well, my wife has a radio show, the Health Matters radio show on KOSP.
Dr. Don Matica, I've heard of him.
Exactly. And so... I've been doing a lot of work on developing a health education website, which is all audio-based. And so it's up there now, but it's pretty simple. And what we're trying to develop is a large database of little clips on health topics. So you
record her shows and then take the segments out where she's acting as her genius self, and you put that up in a searchable feature?
Yes, exactly. We're going to include all the different forms, so little monologues that she's talking about it, topic, and also the caller questions. Because a lot of times, you know, you really can sympathize, or empathize, rather, with a caller who has a similar problem to you. And that kind of interaction in a live call-in radio show is really, really valuable. But then it's there just for that instant, and the number of people who are listening at that instant. And it seems like a really good idea to try to capture that and have it around so other people can access it on the web anytime they wanted to.
The geeks have the same feeling about GeekSpeak. We actually archive our shows. But we've run into a problem where it's really taking MP3s and putting them online. That's a lot of bandwidth, a lot of storage space. How are you dealing with that?
Yeah, I don't have a whole lot of topics there yet, so I haven't run into my limit yet.
Uh-huh.
But I definitely will soon.
Okay, what's the URL, Charlie?
Oh, healthmattersaudio.com. Or actually, healthaudio.com. I got that domain too.
Healthaudio.com. That's great.
Healthmattersaudio.com. Is this any relation to Dr. Dean Adele's Health Matters?
No.
Okay.
He doesn't call it Health Matters, I hope, does he?
No.
Okay, good.
What does he call it then?
I don't know, but that's not Dr. Don's show. So
I don't think so. Anyway, okay. So anyway, so I've been using exploring this PHP, which is a server side language, very Java like actually. It's JavaScript like. It's I don't know a whole lot. I never really learned CGI or Perl because I haven't had to do any server stuff before. So this SitePoint.com and the one simple book they have that gets you off the ground really, really quickly, even if you're not a programmer. And MySQL is just a standard SQL interface, and I did have some experience with database work in SQL before, so that was a little easier.
It's hard for me because Miles isn't here, and he's adamantly against PHP and MySQL.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about that.
And the reasonings in general is that PHP is a pretty bloated language in its tags. Like, there is a special set of tags for connecting to a MySQL database versus a PostgreSQL database. There's no reason for that. If you made the PHP design really clean, then you'd have one set of commands for doing database interaction, and you could switch your databases out in and out no problem. The other thing with MySQL is that MySQL has some problems in its database. In the designers that are designing it, one of their concepts is, well, we don't really need things like triggers, or we don't really need things like transactions. And though they've been added in later on, it wasn't started with a really clean project. It was started with a kind of, we want to make a good, quick database. And that's how it was started, kind of like the first gen of Netscape.
Uh-huh.
So those two reasons have caused some strife in the web development community of whether PHP and MySQL should really be there. But they're the dominant players right now.
Uh-huh.
If you want CGI type of features on a website, you're going to be doing PHP most likely. So there's a lot of in and outs about it. But anyways, it's interesting to hear that you're doing it. It's working for you. And one thing that I found that's great about PHP and MySQL is there's tons of online support.
Exactly.
And you can learn this language so quick and know about how it works. And if you run into any problems, you do a Google search and you've got answers.
Exactly. I agree
with
that.
Great features.
So that's the beauty of open source. So it may not be perfect, but you can do it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So what are you, with the healthmattersaudio.com, what are you doing that's dynamic in the back end?
Well, the list of topics, basically. And so right now there's a short enough list that it's just there in one scrollable window.
Uh-huh.
But I've got tons of recordings I'm plowing through and editing, and eventually it will get a lot larger. So you'll want to have some sort of a search mechanism. And, you can't do brute force text searches on audio files. So,
no, it's kind of hard to do that.
Yeah, exactly. So we're trying to develop a kind of keyword strategy that the user starts to type and it like automatically matches a given set of keywords that I pull out of the database ahead of time and send down with the page, and so you can do JavaScript on the client side to make that more efficient. And
right.
I got all these ideas that I'm kind of trying to work out to make a unique search mechanism for the audio topic.
It sounds like you're going to run into the same situations that we've been running into with, we don't have enough time after the show to transcribe the show.
Exactly.
So we're not doing that. So we do some keywords and some concepts. Now, of course, it's much easier in the GeekSpeak format because our topic for the day is pretty much one topic.
Right.
And you do some keywords on, like today would be Mozilla and maybe your name and, Netscape and AOL. And you pretty much got an index searchable thing to find the show. But we also do news at the top of the hour, and that's always kind of, up in the air. But Don's show, it has so much content in there, and it's always different. Person
exactly.
calls up, asks a question, and it's completely, their personal issue, and of course, very. I love the show; it's a great show.
Okay.
And of course, that's on. What time is it on? I'm
blanking. Saturday, 10 o'clock.
Saturday,
9 o'clock.
9 o'clock.
Yeah.
9 o'clock on Saturdays. I highly recommend, of course, on this station. Now, let's get back a little bit back into the Mozilla project stuff. We say that Mozilla keeps on going, even though AOL. Now, has AOL stopped Netscape development?
I don't know.
They haven't done a press release about it.
No, I know. I wondered about that. But
really,
I just heard about this from my close colleagues that I used to work with. It all went down on Tuesday, and about 50 people got laid off. And I really don't know any more details than that. So it just happened.
Do you know some people that got laid off?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, you were saying. Sorry.
Yeah, most of the people I worked with that were left over that didn't get laid off previously. My situation was really kind of annoying because they actually didn't lay me off in January like they laid off a whole bunch of other people, but they reassigned me to a project that I just didn't want to do.
Project?
Well, they said, somebody told them, oh, this guy likes music and, digital music and stuff, and so they tried to assign me to the group that, wants to sell music,
Hmm.
There's a lot different between, being an audio editor and trying to sell Britney Spears albums, you know?
And that's in AOL in general?
Yeah, and so basically I was forced into the position of having to quit rather than, you know, work. Which
it was their cheap way
severance.
Of laying you off.
So no severance for you?
No severance, yeah.
But you're happy that you left?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. See, ironically, I was planning on quitting sometime in the middle of, like right about now, actually, because I like to finish things, and I really wanted to finish the current release, you know, cycle that we were on.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, layoffs always come in the middle. You know, they always come at the worst time.
Have you been following, like, the news on Mozilla? What's the news site for Mozilla?
A really good site is Mozillazine.
Mozillazine, right.
Yeah.
So have you been following the news about, like, I mean, it has, since Netscape's, I mean, since AOL stopped doing a major development on it, and they've been doing rounds of layoffs. Has the project slowed, the Mozilla project slowed, or has it increased? How's the speed of that?
It seems, I haven't been following it. I haven't been reading a lot of it lately, but the one thing I read recently, I think was at Mozillazine, was it? I don't know. But anyway, in order for a good open sourceware project to keep alive, you really do have to have a kind of core set of people that are, you know, working, that are getting paid by somebody else. And Mozilla has, I think, evolved. You know, it used to be mostly Netscape people,
mm-hmm.
but independent of what's been happening with AOL, it really has gotten more and more people from, like, Sun and IBM and what have you. And there's, you know, a friend of mine just says it's too soon to really know the impact on Mozilla.org of the Netscape thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I heard rumors, you know, that Sun and IBM might step in and support more, you know, contribute more resources to the project. It's not going to die, that's for sure. These things have a life of their own. And,
yeah.
And it's just a matter of companies who believe in the concept of open source to step in and support it. You know, I mean, I really applaud Sun for Open Office, for example. I've thrown out all of the Microsoft Office products, and I was using WordPerfect for a while. I threw that out. Now I use just OpenOffice.
And is OpenOffice available on most platforms?
Yeah.
Okay.
I believe so.
Are you familiar? Are you happy with the product? And this is basically we're talking about
yes,
a replacement for
actually,
Word and Excel.
Actually,
and
yeah. I love it. The functionality, I think, is fantastic. And I've been finding that the spreadsheet program seems to crash a little bit more than I'd like.
Uh-huh.
But otherwise, it's got some nice features. Better, a lot of things better than Excel.
Can you open and save in Excel?
You can open and save all of the Word documents and everything else. They don't convert WordPerfect documents. That's my only complaint so far for the Writer program.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, obviously, given from my history, I'm, you know, try to avoid using Microsoft, even though I really am locked into their operating system. I can't make the jump to the Mac because I've got tens of thousands of dollars of software and hardware invested in the Wintel platform.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, I would. But I definitely try to use open source or other products for awesome. Everything else.
For when you quit in January, or when you got reassigned basically in January
right.
by AOL, and you were no longer working on the Mozilla editor, did you continue working on a little bit on your spare time, or was other? I mean,
I try
that?
To. You know, I've got some bugs I'm working on. I haven't checked in anything since January, but I'm trying to come up with a strategy so I can
work a little bit on that.
Work, you know, at least like a half a day a week or
and
something.
You said there's a great programmer in France that's kind of doing that project?
Yeah. Yeah. Daniel Glasman is a really nice guy, and he's really gung-ho on composer, and so hopefully he'll have, I think he got laid off.
So he was working for Netscape.
Exactly, for yeah. And so I'm hoping that that he continues you know, promoting it and making it, reviving it. So.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't mind contributing to that editor. I would really love a generic schema or DTD-based XML editor.
Right.
And I could see that Mozilla Editor could actually, you know, move into that. The UI is so wonderful to be able to edit tags and see what you're doing at the same time as
absolutely.
Be able to see what the
yeah.
output is. It's a great...
Yeah. He is really gung-ho on XML editing and CSS editing. In fact, he's basically just going off on his own and added a whole lot of CSS editing functionality. If you want to explore that, go and check it out.
I think I will.
And I'm definitely interested in, you know, I've got my biggest bug complaint is that we choke, and it's not the editor, it's the parser. The parser chokes on the little bracket question mark triggers for PHP.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't understand, you know, basically non-HTML tags.
Oh, so are you using a Mozilla editor to edit?
No, I can't. I'm using Dreamweaver.
Yeah, Dreamweaver's a good browser.
Dreamweaver, awesome. Dreamweaver MX rocks. It really rocks.
Right. Any closing remarks, Charlie?
It's been a great time. I really enjoyed working for Mozilla and working for Netscape, rather. It was a great company, and it's a sad story. It's really a sad story to see, I think, the monopolies kind of battle each other and destroy competition and destroy good products along the way.
This program is supported by a grant from Seagate Technology. Seagate is a worldwide supplier of disk drives for PCs and servers and innovations for products like the Microsoft Xbox, digital video recorders, and digital jukeboxes. Information is at Seagate.com. Our guest today, Charlie Manski, worked with Netscape from 1995 to this January. He is now working with his wife, our KOSP's very own Dr. Don Motika, on her website, healthmattersaudio.com. Charlie, thank you very much for joining us on GeekSpeak
today.
Thank you. The geek this morning was John Tracy. Our producer is Maggie Cleveland. Answering the phones, Jennifer Chard. Thank you all for your participation in GeekSpeak. Gary, for calling in, thank you very much for making GeekSpeak a interactive interface, kind of like Dr. Don's show, which is on Saturday mornings at 9 o'clock. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP, Santa Cruz, KBDH, San Ardo. We're on the web at kosp.org. I welcome you to participate in viewing our site, geekspeak.org. I'm Lyle Troxell, and this was GeekSpeak. Coming up next is Fine Print, followed that by my father's show, which I'm totally blanking on. And then we have Two Steps to the Blues with Charlie Lang. So we've got a great lineup. Stay tuned here. Coming up now is Fine Print.